This podcast is brought to you by lineupmedia.fm.
You're listening to This Day in History, a podcast dedicated to examining history from a standpoint of determining which event on any given day had the greatest impact on our lives. Now your host, Tony Hubert and Armand Kachigian.
Welcome into the program, This Day in History on lineupmedia.fm. Tony Hubert with you, my partner Armand Kachigian. Today, we should probably all be off work today. We'll explain later.
That goes for every day. You socialists.
But if you're a good capitalist and you do it right, you can be off work every day.
No, I'm a good capitalist. I work every day.
You work every day.
And every night.
Uh-huh.
No time off.
Yeah, yeah. Okay.
Marxist.
Okay there, hotshot.
Right.
We'll see what kind of
when
capitalist.
Open my new podiatry office. I'm going to pay $3 an hour. No pregnancy leave.
Yeah.
Drudgery.
You'll get no help.
No benefits.
No one will work for you, but good luck.
The chicks will be begging to work
good
for
luck.
Me.
All right.
Anybody want to put an application in?
No, I don't think
send
so.
Send it in via Facebook.
I don't think so. Right. So August 2nd, I got some good events. We got a couple births right up your alley. A couple birthdays right up your alley, Armand.
Okay. A couple of deaths that I like, too.
A couple deaths that you should
I like the people that died. I didn't like that they died.
Yeah.
It's not like they were, you know, liberals.
Oh, please.
Oh, come on. I could see you shedding a tear if a safe landed on Donald Trump. Well, come on. Let's not be hypocrites.
It has nothing to do.
What do you mean? It has a lot to do with it.
No.
What, is that wrong to not shed a tear when somebody you hate dies? I don't think it is. I didn't wish it. You know, I didn't do it just because I'm happy about it.
I don't wish death to conservatives.
I don't wish anything. But when it happens...
Now. Do I shed a tear?
No.
No, I rarely.
I have a little party.
I've reached that stage in my life. I rarely cry about anything, if ever.
Well, you're an old man.
No,
come on, man.
As old as you.
You get old. You get emotional as you get older.
Yeah.
Remember Soylent Green?
There's a good line.
Crying all the time?
I think this was Jack Buck who said this about getting old. He goes, do you get older when you get, do you get more emotional as you get older? Yeah. I cry at good card tricks.
Well, I don't know about that.
That's
senility.
That's a good line. That's a good line. All right. We're brought to you by Amazon.com and Audible.com. When Armand or I have a book recommendation, and I will have book recommendations today based on a birthday.
Well, I might have one, too.
Based on a birthday, I'll have at least two. One, definitely. That you're going to want to go and check out at Amazon.com. Hey, follow us on Facebook and Instagram. Facebook is simple, facebook.com/thisdayinhistorypodcast. And again, folks, subscribe, iTunes, Stitcher, Podbean, any major podcast outlet. And when you get to our pages, check out all the other great shows at lineupmedia.fm. Because one of the topics today, I think, needs to be an episode of Surreal Talk.
Uh-oh.
And we'll just see if you can spot which topic that is.
I got an idea, but
okay.
I don't think there's anything to it. All right.
Really? Which do you think it is? Just shout out
one
a year.
One of our deaths?
Nope.
Well, then. Okay. Well, then you missed one because that's the big, the big supposed.
I like to leave some
conspiracy
stuff for you to find. Well, we start in the year 216.
Well, maybe you do.
BCE.
Start
earlier?
338 BCE.
Do you really went with the Macedonians?
Macedonians.
They're
talking
Macedonians.
About a nut.
They're a bunch of nuts.
The Macedamians? No. Well, yeah, that's a pretty big battle. Chaeronea. 338, our friend Philip II, before he got assassinated, of course, beat Athens and Thebes. That's not easy to do, brother.
No, it's not. I mean,
kicked some ass over in Greece. And he was actually
he beat two city states. So you got to hand it to him for that.
And their allies. And you know,
is Sparta involved in this deal?
No, Sparta sat this one out. I don't know why. I mean, man, what's with those guys? What kind of Spartans are those?
I think there was
a big battle going on.
Well, Athens and Thebes can get their ass kicked. We'll be the better for it at the end of the day.
Yeah, well, that's Darwinian selection, but it's uncharacteristic of the Spartans. It's more characteristic of
the Athenians
us
to sit one out. Right?
No, we don't sit anything out. What am I talking about?
No, we're always
sit
involved.
Anything out. What
In fact, there's another
Swiss.
Date.
It's there, a Swiss.
There's another date coming up.
All right. Anyway, the Philip kicks ass.
Yep.
All right.
Philip the second.
But he was very gentle with those. He actually didn't plunder and chop the heads off everybody.
He just beat them.
Put them to the torch. Yeah. He gave generous terms
at Chaeronea.
Yeah, Chaeronea, I guess. Yeah. But I think it's one of the 50
greatest battles ever.
Well, most important.
Important battles?
Know, greatest.
How about this next battle?
Yeah, this is the biggie.
216 BCE.
You know, we're still
the
Carthaginians.
The Carthaginians. They're from Carthage. They got an army. They're led by Hannibal. And they defeat a much superior, numerically, that is.
Yeah. They
defeat a much superior, numerically, Roman army at Cannae.
Yeah, Varro and Paulus. Paulus got killed. Varro ran away.
Do we have the elephants in this one?
I don't think so. He used those to cross the Alps. I don't think he needed them. This was the double envelopment.
This is
a pincher movement. Infiltrate them.
This is a great tactic.
Yeah, they still use it, actually.
I mean, this is one you would study at West Point, right?
Everybody studies it. Yeah. Study it at Heidelberg, too, or wherever the hell. The von Schlieffen plan, actually, was kind of a big, pincer movement.
But this is something Rommel would have liked. This is something...
Yeah, well, I mean, Rommel's a little different. I think he's a flanking movement. This is like Stalingrad. Operation, what was it? Was it Jupiter? Operation Jupiter? Where the Russians, cut off.
Yeah.
They're always trying to do this now.
Yeah.
But, here's the thing about this, though. I read a book. Who was it? A British guy.
Max Hastings.
No.
Anthony Beaver.
No, the guy that wrote about, he was talking about the the art of the flanking movement and the indirect approach. Was it Thomas? Was that anyway? Because he's talking about how Hannibal kicked the shit out of all these guys, but then Scipio Africanus beat him at Zama, so he ranks him the best general of all time.
He ranks Scipio.
Scipio Africanus. Well, he beat Hannibal, so that's doing something. Because Hannibal's like second or third,
Is he behind
like boxing? Who did you beat?
Is he behind Alexander the Great?
Not Scipio. Oh, you're talking about Hannibal?
How about Hannibal, yeah.
I think he's ahead of him, too. Alexander the Great really beat a bunch of idiots, really, though. I mean, who did he beat? Darius? I mean, a bunch of screwball Persians. I don't think they knew what the hell they were doing.
Great.
These guys are barely out of the trees anyway. Painting themselves blue and shit. That's the British. Anyway, I don't think he beat anybody. Like I said, who's the best boxer of all time? I always say Sugar Ray Robinson because he beat. I mean, the guys he beat were damn good.
He fought in the best era, and he beat everybody in that era.
In like
so,
four divisions.
Right.
You know?
That's why I think you got to say it's him.
Well, I that's why I think. It's like, who did you beat? I mean, like Marciano went undefeated,
but
he's got the kind of the bum of the month club, didn't he? Or that was Joe Louis.
Well,
Joe Louis beat tougher guys. Than
everybody
Marciano.
Had a bum of the month club at some point. You don't get to 49-0 without it.
Primo Carnera had a bum of the month club, but bum of the week club if they paid him off.
Yeah, that's true. 1610, Henry Hudson. He's searching for that elusive Northwest Passage. He ain't gonna find it, folks. Instead, he winds up in Hudson Bay.
Yeah, and that's probably where he died.
Aptly named.
Yeah, well, they set him adrift. Him and his son.
That's a hell of a body of water that really.
Yeah, bye, Henry.
No one. Does anything go on up there?
I don't know.
Have you ever been up there? I've never been up there.
Now that's why they give it to the Inuits. They don't give a shit. But Henry Hudson died not well. I mean, they put him in a longboat and cut him adrift.
Right.
Never heard from again.
Yeah. There you go, buddy.
Well, sorry. I don't remember what he was doing. I think he was it the food, I think. I think that's what pissed his men off.
Generally, that'll piss men off.
Yeah, I think it was the food that got everybody mad.
Now, to the big one of the day. One of the big ones of the day. Should we all be celebrating a holiday today for our nation's independence? Because on this date, August 2nd, 1776, this is the day that the signing of the Declaration of Independence actually takes place.
We've gone into this by, I think, 54 people, but I mean, I think Hancock and, Charles Thompson signed.
They
and
signed.
We couldn't figure it out if it was on the 4th or
they
not.
Signed right away. So I did some research.
Might have been the 2nd of July.
They signed right away.
Yeah.
Then that went to the printers.
Yeah, but okay. What day?
July 2nd.
Okay, the 2nd. So nobody signed on the 4th.
Not really. Then
okay,
copies,
yeah, I can't figure out.
Copies were ordered that were going to go out to the states on July 19th. Okay?
Yeah.
Then everybody gets together. Now, the declaration's already been approved and everything, but everyone gets together on the 2nd, and the majority of the signatures come on this date.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, whatever. I don't know.
August 2nd.
Back, most people don't know. I think like maybe a third of the people really wanted to do this. I mean, one third really didn't give a shit.
Well, there were
one third were loyal, and one third
there were five.
Which just goes to show
there were five people. This is kind of interesting, Armand. There were people who, and I mean delegates. Okay.
Yeah, I'm talking about the populace.
Yeah, I know. But
most people didn't want to. You know, they didn't want a revolution, and didn't partake in it. By the way, which just goes to show.
I'm looking
you.
For the guy. You know, because more than one copy exists, you know that. Who are the gentlemen who refused to sign? And then there's a couple that signed because they wanted to make it look like the Continental Congress was unanimous in this decision. Mm-hmm. You know, one of the original it's to say an original copy is kind of a misnomer. But, you know, the broadsides that they had printed?
Yeah,
one
yeah.
of the broadsides was found in a flea market?
Yeah, right.
Behind a painting in the frame?
That's right. That's
sold
right.
for, the guy paid $4 for it, Armand. Sold for $8.1 million.
Jeez, I don't think it's more than that, but it's probably worth more now.
Now, the one that's at the National Archives?
Yeah.
What you would consider the original, meaning the one they sign on August 2nd.
Yeah.
Okay? That actually does have something written on the back of it.
Oh, like the movie? Wasn't that dumb?
Yeah, but
that
it's not invisible. Yeah, it's National Treasure.
Right.
It's not invisible ink or anything like that. It, the back of it, upside down, across the bottom, is written, Original Declaration of Independence, dated 4th July, 1776. It makes sense because you would roll this up. Therefore, that would act as a label. So it was probably written on it when it was rolled up.
Yeah. Like a scroll.
As a scroll. You write on it. Therefore, that's why it's upside down. And a good trivia question. Is there anything on the back of the Declaration of Independence? Yes, there is. And it's essentially a handwritten label. During the Second World War, they moved this thing to Fort Knox. Wow. Did you ever know that?
What were they worried about?
Worried about Washington.
What, we'd invaded?
Apparently. They packed it up and shipped it to Fort Knox. Wouldn't come back to Washington until 1944.
I didn't know that. But
oldest signer?
Sounds stupid to me. Oldest, Ben Franklin.
And the youngest.
Ooh, youngest. Give me his initials.
Okay. E.R.
Edmund Randolph?
No, but wow. That's a great guess.
How many E.R.s are there? Is that the doctor?
No, this guy's a lawyer. And I'll give you the state, South Carolina.
Ethan something?
No. Edward?
Rutledge. Yeah.
He was 26. And another guy from South Carolina was also just 4 months older than Rutledge, Thomas Lynch Jr. So two guys as young as 26 are signers.
Who's the doctor? Who's that doctor that signed? I think he was a podiatrist, so he couldn't.
No, he wasn't a podiatrist.
Couldn't be a real doctor.
He wasn't a podiatrist. Yeah,
it's one of those phonies.
Yeah, George Washington. On it or not?
He wasn't a podiatrist.
On the Declaration or not?
Let's see. No, Jefferson and Adams, the only presidents.
That's right.
Washington signed the Constitution. So did Madison.
Most signed on August the 2nd. But five others signed later than August the 2nd.
Yeah, I know. This is all screwed up. I don't know.
Elbridge Gerry.
Oh, boy. We know him.
Oliver Wolcott, Lewis Morris, Thomas McKean, Matthew Thornton, all signed later. Two other delegates, John Dickinson and Robert R. Livingston, never signed at all.
Okay.
So you want to go see it? National Archives, the Rotunda.
Yep.
The Rotunda for the Charters of Freedom, right alongside the Constitution and the Bill of Rights.
I wouldn't waste your time going to flea markets looking for another copy anybody's getting that idea.
Out of the 26 broadsides.
Get yourself a metal detector and go to Coney Island.
They probably they found one in Britain. Buried in an archive.
Wow, that's like finding a Magna Carta. And
they sent one to Britain.
You know, Fort Dearborn.
So it was from a box of stolen revolutionary papers, and that was found you know, some long time after. All right, so there you have it. Maybe we should be celebrating today as our nation's independence. Although the 4th of July just has a better ring to it than the 2nd of August.
Well, that's because we're used to it.
I don't know. I think it has a better ring.
Okay.
I do.
It's up to you.
And it's right in the middle of summer.
Well, that's why I like my birthday. I got 4 weeks from, you know, right in the middle of 4th of July and Labor Day.
Yeah, there you go.
I always like
that. Get some holidays.
Of course, I ain't getting presents anyway, so who cares?
I'll bring you a book. 1870. Your first underground tube railway opens in London.
Where else?
The Tower Subway.
That's a weird name.
Well,
it's like having, yeah.
I love
Tower Subway. Does that make sense? Isn't that an oxymoron?
It's kind of an oxymoron, but it's they're at
the Mesosphere Subway.
Oh, come on, they're at the
what
tower.
What kind of stupid name is that?
They're at the well, have you heard of some of the tube names in that? Come on,
it's a very highly elevated subway, wasn't it? Fuck, stupid name, man. The Tower Subway.
Hold on, I'm gonna see if I get your reason.
I hope that's the guy's name.
It's between Tower Hill and Vine Lane. Oh. Yeah, Tower Hill. That's why.
I think Vine Subway would be better.
Just Cock Foster's is my favorite tube station in London. I like Blackfriars and I like Cock Foster's. Kind of,
yeah, they got some great names. I'll give them that much.
But man, oh man, I love the tube. You can zoom all over that city.
I haven't been there a long time.
Oh man, you aren't a real.
No.
You are not a real city unless you have some type of transit like that.
Well, I don't know about that. What city? Well, what city really doesn't?
Los Angeles,
St. Louis.
Hey,
what do you mean? They got a subway.
No, they do, but it's not. You can't zoom all over L.A.
All right. You don't zoom.
No,
you creep.
Well, come on, you can go from downtown to New York up into the Bronx in a matter.
Yeah, well, that's
it's wonderful.
I know, but I don't know if that's what constitutes a great city.
Oh, it makes it great.
San Francisco doesn't have they got BART. That's just as good, I would think.
BART's okay. It moves you longer distances.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, you can go from San Jose on a BART to one of the express ones up to the top of the peninsula in 20 minutes. Yeah, it's wonderful.
Go up to
Speaking of Frisco, Armand, 1873, the Clay Street Hill Railroad starts operating the first cable car. You ever ridden the cable cars out there?
It's fun.
Yeah. It's a good touristy thing to do.
I've ridden the cars in New Orleans, too, on Charles Avenue.
I've never ridden on those. The street cars?
Yeah.
Those look cool.
Streetcar named Desire.
Do you say Desire? Is that the name of the district?
That's the deal. I don't know. I don't know about that.
Can I get a ruling on that from somebody? Is it Desire?
Tennessee Williams.
Is it Desiree? Is it?
Yeah, I know. I've seen both, but I think it's Desire.
Take you out to that district. You can go through the Garden District.
I've always relied on the kindness of strangers.
Sure you have, slut.
Hey, watch it. It's Vivian Leigh, man.
1923. Today, August 2nd, Calvin Coolidge becomes your president of the United States.
I'm going to have a nice long homily on Warren Harding.
Upon the death of
Warren Gamaliel Harding.
Oh, upon
that's
the death
a conspiracy
of
they're thinking. His wife kill him.
Well, did she have motive, Armand?
Well, not really. He was just fucking around. That's not a motive.
Well,
she knew
you,
it.
Why
all of a sudden would she?
She found out about that woman on K Street.
Britton, she
got a little pissed off.
Yeah, but see, this guy was a womanizer all his life. It's like this is nothing new. She was a good wife. She just turned her head.
So you think there's some conspiracy behind the
death of
Harding?
Yeah.
Interesting.
Also, she's reading him a story. He says, that's good. Keep going. And drop dead.
Then he drops dead.
Yeah.
What story was she reading
I don't know. Something pornographic.
Oh, bless.
If I know Warren Harding or something about poker.
How do you think Coolidge reacted? Because I've always wondered, other than, like, you know, you got to take LBJ out of the equation because he's actually there when it happens.
Yeah.
So he knows.
Coolidge was sworn in by his father.
By his dad.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, very interesting.
I think he was up in Vermont at home.
At home and his
doing
dad,
what VPs do. Nothing.
Nothing.
And his dad was
a judge.
I think it's like a notary, justice of the peace.
So
the guy had the ability to do
it. He had the ability to do it.
Yeah, he had the station.
Always wondered, like, okay,
but he's the only president sworn in by this father.
How did Roosevelt react? Truman react? How did Hoover here react? Or I'm sorry, Coolidge here react? Because at some moment they have to come into the room and say, Mr. President, or what do you even address him as at that point?
I think you do.
Well, Mr. President pro temp.
Check out the movie, Advise and Consent, where the president, Franchette Tone, dies.
Mm-hmm.
And who was the Speaker of the House? Or no, not that, the Vice President. He was presiding over the Senate. It was not Don Ameche. God, who was that actor? Anyway, they come in and give him the note, you know.
And what's the appropriate way to react? Like,
well, you got to be happy, yeah. I don't know. Vice President's a good gig, man. You have to do anything. You get a good salary. Who wants to be president?
To
it's like being the backup quarterback. You know?
Well,
just carry a clipboard and don't do shit. I'd rather be
See,
Veep,
you can't even consider Ford either, because Ford knew the resignation's coming.
Well, yeah, that wasn't
so.
Right.
So there's only like Andrew Johnson, who
shocks like that.
Who's
Teddy Roosevelt? I'm sure, man. That guy probably did a war hoop. That's what he wanted to do all his life.
I'd love to know who the people are who informed the vice president, and then what all of their reactions
were. Teddy Roosevelt went over and gave Chalgosh a big French kiss. That's what he did.
Because I wonder if any of them reacted like the Pope, who, upon hearing he's elected, runs out of the Sistine Chapel.
Does what?
He doesn't want it.
Oh. Well, why wouldn't you want that? Somebody make me infallible.
So that happened. 1923. 1932.
No, we'll talk about that later. I'm going to talk about Harding.
You want to talk about Harding?
Well, on the death.
Yeah, go. Oh, in the death,
yeah,
sure. 1932. We love science on this day in history.
Oh,
and
yeah.
The discovery by Carl D. Anderson of,
heard of him.
An antiparticle called the positron.
Well, this is a affirmation of Paul Dirac. He's the one that said all these particles have
subatomics.
Well, they all have like there's an antiproton and an anti. You know, this is the anti-electron, basically positron.
Positron
has a name.
Isn't that weird to name it a positron if it's an anti-electron?
Well, electron has a negative.
Ah, so
negative
it does
charge.
Positive.
Yeah.
Got it.
That's
makes
why.
Sense to me now. Okay, yeah. Good.
I don't know if there's an anti-neutron. I mean, there's a neutrino, but anyway, Paul Dirac is the guy that came up with these. I like him. He's one of my favorite scientists. You know, they actually had a unit called a Dirac.
Really?
Yeah, it's one word per hour, like his lectures.
One word per hour.
The guy was very taciturn, like Calvin Coolidge, basically, I guess.
Oh, man.
And he'd always come up to people and says, "I'm Paul Dirac. I have an equation. Do you?"
I have an equation.
Yeah, the Dirac equation.
Well, if I had an equation, I might try.
If I had Milton Berle's dick, that's what I'd say.
Show him enough of your equation to win there, Dirac. 1934, this is also the day, August 2nd. A gentleman by the name of Paul von Hindenburg
dies. Another death, a big one. This is the big, well, it's not really that big of a, Hitler, now here,
Hitler's
talking
already,
about how people.
He's
Hitler,
already in power.
Yeah, well, Hitler knew it was coming.
Yes.
So he's for weeks, he's talking to Raeder and the guy in charge of the army, who I forget his name, but he wasn't as tractable as Raeder. But anyway, he got them both on board because he knew Hindenburg. Because technically, he's not supposed to be, Chancellor's not supposed to take over, according to the Weimar Constitution.
Right. That's right.
But Hitler, you know, like Obama, doesn't really care about the Constitution.
Oh, Jesus.
Well, and Bush, and Johnson.
Start naming them all then.
Yeah. And Bush won. Yeah. Don't give a damn about the Constitution. So, why not? I got the Army. I got the Navy. I'm the guy.
Well, this is the day that the title Führer is bestowed. Because
von Hindenburg had a cancer. I think it's lung cancer. He's an old man.
How about von Hindenburg? Now, this guy.
Yeah.
His name's associated with two of the worst things ever.
Well, I can think
he
of
dies,
one.
Hitler becomes the Führer, and the blimp,
Zeppelin.
The Zeppelin named after him crashes.
Yeah, but he's a pretty good general, actually.
Okay, but no one knows that.
I do.
Okay, good
and
for
I'm
you.
The only
You're
one
of the few guys that know anything about Hindenburg.
I mean, he's no Scipio Africanus.
You
he's
go up
there.
To
he's any, a top 200.
Anybody on the street and say, Paul von Hindenburg, and they'll say, that blimp that crashed.
Oh, really?
I
don't think of anybody. Again.
We ought to do that sometime. Just take a microphone out to the street.
Right. How many people know what the Hindenburg is?
Well, let's see how many people know about this next one. 1937.
They say it's a bad movie with George C. Scott.
This is the one that I think Surreal Talk should do a complete show on. The Marijuana Tax Act. The marijuana, spelled with an H, by the way.
Yeah.
Marijuana. M-A-R-I-H-U-A-N-A.
Yeah. The 420 Act.
The 420.
How did you get that? What is that? Where'd that come from?
Okay,
anyway?
I will give you what
make it brief.
What I believe might be a passable explanation.
All right.
Sometime in either the 50s or the 60s, you know, California high schools are largely outdoor Not that you have class outside, but
they're hallways or whatever for they're an atria.
Everybody, when they would get off, would assemble at 4:20 to smoke pot because that's basically when the bell rang.
Yeah,
and it just became code. That's one of the explanations I've heard that I kind of like. And then because it's kids and it's youth culture, the 4:20 permeates out through society. You know, it gets spread.
Yeah,
because young kids often get to name the stuff.
Okay.
You know, and it gets disseminated that way. Right.
So that's how
everything's
insidiously.
Yeah, because at my school, this would have been called 2:45. And we didn't get off at 4:20. By 4:20, I was already home asleep.
If I hear that something like that, I think it's Dr. Pepper. But that's 10, 2, and 4, isn't it?
That's 10, 2, and 4, right?
You ever play that poker?
No.
Tens, twos, and fours wild? Like six kings and lose? Jeez. What a game that is. Dr. Pepper.
Okay, so this act, though, all right? You got to hear some of the crap behind this thing. Because, first of all...
What are we talking about?
The Marijuana Tax Act.
Oh, well, I think, did they just tax her? The one that outlawed it?
It basically makes it.
Yeah, but this is a government going stupid again, of course.
This is exactly right. So in the 1920s, here's one of the things. This is from PBS's website, by the way, which I know.
Uh-oh.
No, hold on. You're going to love this. After the Mexican Revolution of 1910, Mexican immigrants flooded into the U.S., introducing American culture to recreational marijuana use. The drug became associated with immigrants, and fear and prejudice about the Spanish-speaking newcomers becomes associated with marijuana. Anti-drug campaigners warned against the encroaching marijuana menace, and terrible crimes were attributed to marijuana.
Yeah, reefer and madness.
The Mexicans who used it. 1930s, fear of marijuana. During the Depression, massive unemployment, increased resentment of Mexican immigrants. This escalates concern amongst the government and the public about marijuana. This instigates a flurry of research which linked the use of marijuana with violence, crime, and other socially deviant behaviors. All bullshit.
Right, that's all nonsense.
All bullshit.
Just like global warming.
And then the conclusion is that these crimes are primarily committed by racially inferior or underclass communities.
Hmm.
By 1931, 29 states had outlawed marijuana. Now, again, ask who benefits by this.
Key Bono.
Who benefits? 1932.
Anheuser-Busch.
Uniform State Narcotic Act.
Tobacco, I guess. Big tobacco.
One of the big pushers against marijuana.
AMA?
Nope. AMA is behind them. AMA objected.
Really? I don't know why. They knew it cured cancer and
the
stuff.
The AMA came in and objected to this act. They did. They came in late. 1936, your propaganda film, Armand, Reefer Madness, is released.
I love that movie, by the way. Reefer it's got to be watched
Madness
to be believed.
Unbelievable.
I only wish that shit did that. You ever see, like, it turns all these women into sluts? Psh.
All it does is make a whole bunch of people tired.
And hungry. They laugh a little bit.
Food services industry should love this.
I know.
So in 37,
Ocho Man's got a bag out there today.
The Marijuana Tax Act is passed. And yes, so one of the leading senators pushing for this from North Carolina. Well, what do you grow in North Carolina?
Cotton.
And?
Hemp.
Tobacco.
Tobacco, of course. Well, that goes for anything government does. That's the whole point.
Well, but here's what
I've been saying for the last.
And then in the
months.
1950s, through the Narcotics Control Act,
that's
1956,
the one I'm thinking of. Yeah.
This is where mandatory sentencing for drug-related offenses, which now include marijuana, come into play. And now you have reason to lock up a whole bunch of people that you don't like. For basically
and steal all their property too,
and confiscate
without even
their
locking
property.
It. Yeah, why even lock them up? Just take everything
you've
got.
There you have it. There's your motivation, and also the DuPonts, Hearst, and Mellons are also supposedly
Mellons got to do with
behind
it. I mean,
this.
He's probably too busy collecting art, cornering the art market.
The problem is with hemp. You had a little something else coming down the line from.
That ruined that industry, too.
Well, you had something else coming down the line from the DuPont family.
Well, nylon and all that stuff.
Well, yeah. I mean, and I'm looking for it
polymers.
Here. Some parties have argued that the aim of the act was to reduce the size of the hemp industry, yep, largely as an effort of businessmen Andrew Mellon, Randolph Hearst, and the entire DuPont family.
Well, that makes sense.
There
now
you have it. I think that is worth a whole show of surreal talk. Honest to God, I do. 1939, Albert Einstein and Leo
Szilard, Hungarian.
They both pen a letter to FDR, and they urge him to begin the Manhattan Project for developing a nuclear weapon. How about that?
Well, here's the thing. I mean, actually, they're both wrong, because the whole premise was that the Germans are way ahead of us. Heisenberg and those guys are going to get one if we don't. And that's all bullshit, because they never even came close. But, okay. So they did. And you know how FDR was with science. Probably had to have somebody read this to him. What? An atom? What's that? He's too busy reading Zane Grey novels.
Mm.
And setting the gold price depending on what's a lucky number today. That's a lucky $21 an ounce. That's not a lucky number. Go ahead.
All right.
Anyway, he's an idiot.
So there you have it. That's the first half of our event. Let's do some birthdays. Who was born on August 2nd? Here's one of my favorites. I start in 1892.
Oh, yeah.
Jack L. Warner, the co-founder of Warner Brothers, my favorite studio.
Well, then this is your favorite big-time studio mogul, then.
Because, yes.
Well, let's see. It was Sam. The Warner Brothers. Sam, Jack, Albert, and Harry. Harry was the one that was actually maintained the peace, because Jack and Albert, or was it, let's see.
Yeah, which two?
No, Jack and Harry hated each other.
Okay.
I think Sam was the one that kept things kind of peaceful. Then he died in the, 31 or 32. And then, Jack and Harry fought like crazy. Interesting about Jack was, he never, the cartoons we love.
Yes.
He always thought that was just nonsense. I don't think he even knew where that department was.
It's located on the lot. It was called Termite Terrace. And I asked a tour guide out there years ago. I said, where is it? And he goes, it's long gone. But it was over here. And he showed me where it was, and it truly was in a corner of the lot.
Jack Warner, that was like the bad, the stepchild. And he sold, apparently in the late 40s, he sold every cartoon they made for $3,000 a piece.
Oh, my God.
So the people were making millions off these. Not Warner Brothers, though. Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, that was a bad move.
Wow.
But otherwise, a lot of people hated his guts. Errol Flynn called him sporting blood. Of course, Errol called everybody sport.
Sport.
Yeah. But, they had a lot of fights with Betty Davis, who apparently thought he was a pretty good guy. I don't know. Cagney didn't like him. He and Errol Flynn fought all the time. But the thing was, Warner's was noted for being cheap. That's why, these cinema guys now, look at the lighting and all this stuff of these 1930s gritty gangster movies.
Yeah.
It was so you couldn't see how cheap the sets were.
Yeah, it's to hide.
I always told them, hey, keep the lights down.
Right. It's to hide the shit.
Yeah. How cheap and everything. Like film noir is the same thing.
Yeah.
These French guys, these auteurs, they find all this significance in all these movies.
Let's do it on
just
the down low.
They made money. Yeah. But anyway, that was noted for being a cheapo, and Jack Warner was cheapest of the cheap. But hell of a guy.
I love them from the 1930s all the way to today.
I love gangster movies and everything. But, yeah.
Plus, their studio tour is the best.
Oh. Well, they're the only ones still in. Well, they're not in Hollywood. They're in.
They're in Burbank or
Toluca
Burbank Lake.
Look,
they bought a great piece of property there back in the day.
Leave?
And
they'll
never really leave.
Paramount's the only one still in Hollywood.
Yeah.
They were all
Paramount's on the other side of the hill.
Yeah, yeah.
Otherwise, you got to, because Universal is not in Hollywood. Warner's not in Hollywood.
No, MGM's in
Columbia's
Studio City.
Not in Hollywood. MGM's in, City.
Culver City
now, yeah. Yeah, if you've never done the studio tour at Warner, there's two tours. One is just kind of like the regular tourist one, and it takes you about 3 hours, and it's really good. There's another one, and it's expensive, Armand. It's like $250.
Ooh.
But you go the entire day. And you do a lot more, and that's the one I want to do sometime. And you eat in the commissary.
Well, I don't know if that's
I don't know if that's a treat or not.
Yeah, I think I'd take a bag lunch with you.
Maybe if they did a food fight from Blazing Saddles.
Boy, yeah, that's a great ending. I wish I could end a movie just like that.
You can. That's the beauty of it.
If I were Mel Brooks, I could.
1905, Myrna Loy, the
now,
American
this gal,
actress.
Actually, if you watch. What was that Fu Manchu with Boris Karloff? He's her daughter.
Oh.
She's like this vamp, and she's Oh, yeah. She's like this Oriental beauty. That's what they're going to make her, like this really, like a Theta Bara kind of thing, you know? But that didn't quite work out. She had these Asian looks. You know, they're making her look like the Yellow Peril.
Yeah.
But anyway, she was the queen of Hollywood. She turned down Claudette Colbert's part in It Happened One Night. Big mistake. Ooh. She was never nominated for Academy Award.
Really?
Which is really
That's
weird, 'cause she's one of the biggest.
She was good box office, too, I imagine,
yeah.
Right?
My favorite is Bachelor in Bobby Socks Cary Grant.
God, those are big movies, man.
I know a man. Man with the power. Remember, ever seen it? What power? Power of voodoo. Who do? You do. Do what? Know a man. Yeah.
That's a good line.
So, Myrna Loy,
1923, Shimon Peres, ninth president of Israel. He just passed away last year in 2016.
Was he in a coma for all those years?
Yes. Yep.
Well, was that him or Sharon? I guess it was him.
Was it he or Ariel Sharon?
I don't know. One of them was in a coma for like 10 years.
Look it up. 1924. Carol O'Connor, who we talked about a lot recently. Happy birthday, Carol.
I was just watching Devil's Brigade the other day.
Yeah, I still got to watch that. 1932. Boy, this guy is responsible for the shaping of American sports in ways that you can't even fathom. Happy birthday, Lamar Hunt.
Oh, yeah. He's the guy that coined.
Coined the Super Bowl.
Yeah, wasn't he watching his kid play
kid
the Super Bowl?
Play with a Super Bowl, right. Because the Super Bowls 1 and 2 were not named Super Bowls 1 and 2.
It was AFL
the
NFL championship game.
NFL championship game, yes.
Yeah.
Hunt is the co-founder of the American Football League. Also brought a lot of the modern business techniques to professional sports in America. Realized
who do you own, KC?
Well, he created the Dallas Texans.
The Texans.
Which
The
moved. Nope.
Oh, well.
Nope. The Dallas Texans are not the Cowboys.
Oh.
The Dallas Texans became the Kansas City Chiefs.
Yeah, the Chiefs. Well, that's what I know them as.
Yeah. And the Cowboys were an original, weren't an original NFL team, but were always NFL. The original Cowboys, by the way, are the Indianapolis Colts of today.
Yeah, well, they were the horrible team, too.
Oh, they were bad for a long time until they got their groove on. Yeah.
They were doormats.
I think the year that they go to the Ice Bowl, 67.
Because
they were nearly in that first Super Bowl.
Right.
You know, so they probably had probably about eight rough seasons before they got it together. Really got it together. And then from then on, they went on a run of about 25 years of excellence.
Yeah.
Before they've
come on some hard times.
Yeah,
lately.
Before they fell on some hard times. And then Jimmy Johnson and Jerry Jones come.
I don't think I've ever seen Ocho Man cry except for that one where, who was the one? Was it
Jackie Smith drops the.
No. Much more recent where they got to kick a field goal and the guy fumbled the snap or whatever.
That was brutal.
Was that Romo? I think Romo fumbled it.
God,
right?
That was brutal.
Yeah, that Ocho Man was
also
quite chop-fall.
Same day as Lamar Hunt, Peter O'Toole.
Yeah, good actor. Now here again, this guy's got the record. Well, I guess it's not Perez because it says after suffering a stroke, Perez died on, must be Ariel Sharon. Huh?
Yeah, Sharon was in the coma then.
Yeah, so he had a stroke and dropped dead.
Yeah, give me something of O'Toole other than Lawrence.
My favorite Peter O'Toole movie is My Favorite Year.
Okay.
You ever seen it?
No.
He's basically playing Errol Flynn.
Give me a year.
82.
82.
But it's set in 1954.
Gotcha.
And here's the premise, and it's great. He's playing like an Errol Flynn, the swashbuckler who's kind of washed up, and he's a drunk.
Mm-hmm.
And they want him on a show, which is a kind of an ill-conceived, concealed Sid Caesar show. In fact, they call it the King Kaiser show. And they can't figure out. So they put this one of the writers, a young writer, on him and said, make sure this fucker doesn't drink. And guess, you know, but he's a real, it's Errol Flynn is what it is. And it's great. It's funny, man. It's
My
a really
favorite
funny movie.
Year. Okay.
My favorite year.
Good recommendation. Check it out if you want. Amazon or, well, definitely Amazon. This Day in History podcast.com. Click that Amazon banner. Look for Peter O'Toole's My Favorite Year. Also, 1939, a director with a lot of success in a genre, Wes Craven.
Yeah.
You a fan? No.
No, but I mean, my ex-girlfriend was in she said he's a really good director.
And which movie was she in?
People Under the Stairs.
People Under the Stairs.
Yeah.
1947, an author, well, really, foremost a journalist, secondarily an author, Lawrence Wright. Happy birthday, Lawrence Wright. If you have not read The Looming Tower by Lawrence Wright about the lead-up to 9/11, I forget
I thought
the date.
It was about the London Underground.
No, I forget the date, but it goes from there to September 10th, 2001. look, don't worry about what your politics are.
I always worry about what your politics are.
This is bipartisan. The reporting is
it can't be any good.
The reporting is very good, and the detail that the looming tower gets into.
It was an inside job?
No, but boy, they could have nipped this so many times. There were opportunities.
Oh, what are you talking about? Yeah, well,
there were opportunities missed. One guy in Minnesota, I remember in the book, screaming, "Can we do something before some terrorists hijack some planes and fly them into the World Trade Center?"
Oh,
actually said that.
Prescient.
Yeah. So,
you know, but here again, that I can see where people would dismiss this kind of thing. I mean, this is just paranoia, and this is the stuff of a cheap Hollywood movie.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just amazing that anybody would do this and get away with it.
It still shocks the senses to this day. But I mean, the Looming Tower is a great read. He's done a lot of other journalism regarding terrorism, I find him very I find him very objective, and I don't find him apologetic to any audiences. He calls out what he sees.
Okay. Well, never explain, and how's it going? Never explain, never apologize. I don't know.
Yeah. Anyway. 1980.
Apologize. Sign of weakness. She wore a yellow ribbon.
My name of the day.
Yeah, I knew. I figured this.
Ding Dong Dantes.
I guess.
Now, who was Ding Dong Dantes or Dantes?
Well, Dantes, I guess. Edmond Dantes was the Count of Monte Cristo.
Ding Dong Dantes is actually a Filipino actor, a director, a producer, and a singer of some note.
Just some note?
Yeah, he's...
If you're a singer, you should be all notes,
shouldn't
you?
He's very popular. And I tell you what, go look at a picture of...
he's not a screenwriter, too? Everybody's
a screenwriter.
He might
be. Everybody's a screenwriter. I'm a screenwriter, Ramon.
Yeah. Impresario?
Nah.
Electrician? Gaffer?
I'd like to be a best boy. Do I want to be a best boy or a
key grip? I knew that was coming.
Anyway.
I hate it when you bandy around film words.
Dude's a pretty good looking guy, man.
Is
he? Yeah, yeah. And his real name, of course, is not Ding Dong.
My buddy sent me a picture of his Filipino girlfriend. She's hot.
Oh, yeah. She a nurse?
You want to see her?
Yeah, sure.
Wow, she's all right, man.
Now, back to the event shaping our world. 1943, August 2nd. This is the date.
Look at that body, huh?
Yay. Whoa.
Wasp wasted.
Oof. Wow. 1943, this is the day that the prisoners at Treblinka stage revolt.
You got nothing to lose.
They truly had nothing to lose. And
I'm surprised more of these didn't happen, actually.
Well, they did. There are 900,000 people murdered in less than 18 months at Treblinka. My God.
Yeah, I don't think it's still... Number one.
God bless those prisoners for at least taking destiny into their own hands. I mean, I can't. I really, Armin, I can't even imagine.
Yes,
it's
beggar's description.
Yes, it Begar's description. Did you say Begar's or
beggars?
1943. This is also the day.
Oh yeah, the Amagiri.
The Amagiri sinks PT-109, and John F. Kennedy, your future president, is credited for saving all but two of his crew. Too bad he couldn't teach his brother how to save people in the water.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
I know that joke's been made a million times, but...
Well, he'll... What's that joke? What's the joke about that? I don't know. I'll run off that bridge when I come to it.
I'll run off that bridge when I... Oh, God. So PT-109, a book that...
And, of course, this is where he hurt his back, and he always had problems after...
But he also had...
The beginning of the
he
end
also had a diagnosed...
he had Addison's disease.
Addison's disease.
Yeah, it was, adrenal glands.
But this event on August 2nd does connect to November 22nd.
Yeah, he had to wear a back brace.
Because of just that. He is wearing a back brace as he's riding, as he did.
Yeah, always.
Okay,
yeah.
Always. And,
except when he was fucking fiddle and faddle in his pool.
Oh, yeah, well... The water.
Remember Fiddle and Faddle?
Fiddle and Faddle.
Yeah. His little naiads.
Still would have liked to see Jackie's face when she comes down to the pool.
She almost did. She did. Yeah, they ran out. Man.
Yeah.
And she saw the footprints. now, what are these? She wasn't that dumb.
No, she's not dumb. Back to the story about the back brace, though, and how August 2nd, 43 connects to November 22nd, 63. He has Addison's disease. And he's wearing a back brace, like Armand said, folks, as he always did. It's not just on that day. But when he gets hit by the first shot that goes through his throat, his neck area.
Should have knocked him over.
It should have knocked him over, and his head should have been below the rim of the convertible, for lack of a better term. But it's the brace that essentially keeps him up and allows for the second shot or third shot.
That's pretty damn good shooting, man.
Yeah, it is.
From where that guy was?
To hit his
moving target?
To hit his skull.
Damn.
So
that's a
there is a causal, there is a linkage there. 1947, boy, South American plane crashes fascinate me. This one especially. An Avro Lancastrian airliner crashes into a mountain. The flight is going from Buenos Aires to Santiago, Chile. So you got to cross the Andes.
Well, this isn't the guys that ate each other.
No, this
right?
is not the guys that ate yeah. each other. This is not alive.
Yeah, alive. That's it.
But this
and
plane
it's not
crashes.
The soccer team.
No. And as Gilbert Gottfried said, I was once in a plane crash in South America, but I never ate a soccer player. I mean, come on, a whole soccer player?
Why did he lose his job? Didn't he used to do like the Aflac or what? Was that Gilbert Gottfried?
I don't know.
He said something. And somebody pissed off.
He pisses a lot of people off. Yeah. You know, I love the guy.
Yeah, he had a great joke. I like it.
He's got some. They know the plane is crashed. They know it's gone. They don't discover the wreckage of this plane until 1998.
Well, that figures.
50
yeah.
years later.
Well, they couldn't find Antoine Saint-Exupéry.
That's true.
Out in the middle of the desert, you would think they could find that.
Well, it's covered, hard, man.
Covered with sand.
Sand.
But you would think that'd be easier than this in the Andes.
Finally, 1990.
Yeah.
This is the date. That and I remember this date distinctly.
I do too.
And I'm 19 years old?
I was in Topeka, Kansas doing
residency.
I'm 19
years old. I really don't know a lot at that point.
I was in bed with a nurse.
But I came home, I flip on, and I'm flipping through cable, you know, and I get to CNN, and it's Iraq invades Kuwait. And instantly I knew this is bad news.
Well, I didn't. I thought, this okay, is so bad. What? But it turned into
because my
crazy
dad,
shit.
Because one of the few times that I ever saw my dad really react to anything, he came, and I know what he was worried about. He was worried about, oh, man, we're going to war, and I got a 19-year-old.
Oh, you?
Yeah.
I would have been that worried. I'd have been more worried if I were 19 years old.
Oh, that's true.
Then I'd have been more worried.
But that's one of the few times he was like, I could tell, oh, this is serious. My parents are really paying attention to this
one.
Yeah,
well. The guy taught me podiatry, only went into podiatry, so we have to go to Vietnam.
Have you ever heard that part of the reason for the invasion was Kuwait was breaking all the rules of the cartel
really?
At the time?
I wouldn't, you know. Yeah, I don't know about this. Here again, do we really want to go to war over little countries like Kuwait and Estonia? And, you know, these guys want to join NATO and all this. That means we got to defend them, right? Supposedly.
Well, it's
crazy.
It's a contract, and again, contract.
Contracts
are great until it's time to execute.
Well, that's why George Washington warned against this shit treaties.
I mean,
but no, we keep signing them.
So,
all right. Anyway, yeah, we know what this led to: Operation Desert Shield, Desert Storm.
Should they have Gulf taken? Wars. Should they have taken him out the first time?
You know,
did Bush make
a
mistake?
Hard to say.
Because the story of Schwarzkopf saying, I'm on the highway. There's nothing between us and Baghdad.
Yeah, right. Well, I mean, I don't mind him taking him out the second time. Just don't stand around and make a democracy the place. That's not what we're about.
We'll have an exit strategy.
Yeah. We're going to take him out and get the hell out of there. But anyway.
No exit strategy.
We never do.
All right.
We never exit.
No.
Why have a strategy?
We say, again.
When are we going to leave Afghanistan now?
Never.
God.
This is what Dick Cheney and I are in total agreement on this stuff.
You and Dick Cheney?
What's the exit? Because he said stuff like this before. He goes, oh, there's no.
We never think of that, though.
Yeah,
never.
We're 70 years later. We're still in Germany.
Mm-hmm.
70 years later, we're still in Japan.
Are we?
60 years
later. Japan.
We still have stuff in
well,
Japan.
Well, like Okinawa and shit, I guess.
Yeah. We're still in Korea.
Nothing like, yeah, Korea. Germany, Korea. We have 700 bases.
We're in Italy.
Can't we do with 600?
Still in Italy.
I say get out of Afghanistan first. Is the Taliban really that big of a threat? You might as well occupy Saudi Arabia then, you know, if that's your logic. They're the ones, right? They were raped. They're Arabs, right? 9/11. The Taliban. What a threat.
That's who I think the real enemy is.
Well, the Pakistanis are worse than the damn Taliban, but we don't fight them.
All right.
Give them money.
Who died on this date?
Oh, yeah. Well, we've talked about this dude.
1876.
Wild Bill Hickok.
Holding a pair of eights and a pair of aces, Wild Bill Hickok passes away.
Yeah.
Well.
Wild Bill Hickok, Buffalo Billius, And just plain Bill.
And just plain Bill. But this is the day Wild Bill.
Yeah, Jack McCall. Now, apparently, here's what happens. You know, they're playing poker the night before, and Hickok pretty much, you know, McCall leaves in a barrel, basically. You know, he cleans him out.
Yeah.
He said, hey, and Hickok's a good winner. He says, hey, can I buy you breakfast? You better quit. Take it easy. I'll buy you some breakfast, you know. So apparently that's what pissed him off. Don't buy me breakfast.
Oh, that he wanted to help him?
Well, I guess, yeah. And what now, a guy. But then there's others conflicting theories that he killed McCall's brother.
Mm.
But why are you playing poker with a guy then? But anyway.
Yeah. Well.
But the thing is, the next day he comes in, he wants to sit as usual, as per his custom, against the wall.
And he can't.
He can't because this guy named, I think his name is Richie or whatever, says, no, I'm not moving. So he ends up with his back to the door. Don't do that.
Don't do that.
McCall came in and blew him away.
Yep.
Blowed him away.
You know, we got a guy here in the office who cannot go out to dinner with his back to the door. He'll get up and leave.
Who's that?
Yeah, well, I'm not naming names. We have a guy in this office. He cannot. He can't do it. He will ask people to rearrange the entire table so he can.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. 1922, Alexander Graham Bell passes away.
Yeah. What's he done lately?
Well. Do you think, did he ever pay a phone bill?
I hope not.
It'd be weird. It'd be weird to get a bill if you were Bell.
Not exactly Tim Cook.
1923, Warren G. Harding.
All right,
again.
This is the guy I want to go over.
So, yeah, Armand, the floor is
yours.
Well,
he dies in the Palace Hotel in San Francisco, and the conspirator did his wife kill him, you know, but I don't think that. But here's the thing. This guy is always ranked as, like, the worst president of all time. And granted, there were all kinds of... You know, they're all like, you know, Fall and Teapot Dome. And there are people making a lot of money because the guy is a hands-off president.
Yeah.
But if you look, the Depression in 1920 lasted like, 9 months, 12 months, not even a year? Okay, why?
Was it really a depression
yeah,
or was
of
it just
it was
a
full-fledged depression? No, no.
Okay, because the economy was shrinking.
Shrinking and bad.
Okay.
Because the war ended, and of course, we're not paying for all this war again, right. So as usual. But the guy did nothing. Okay, great. That's exactly what you should do. And it didn't last very long, which is what the president should be doing. You should be playing poker in the White House and doing nothing. That's why he's the worst. Now, as opposed to like Teddy Roosevelt, who wants to go off and get us in wars everywhere and fight everybody and put his, you know, put his big nose in everything going on in the Western Hemisphere and the East. That's what I'm saying. Does that constitute a bad president? I don't think so. I think that's a good president. He knew what the office was.
All's I know that... my father went to Warren G. Harding grade school, so he must have been okay. They named a grade school after
him. I went to Coolidge
him.
Junior High.
Now, my mother went to Woodrow Wilson grade school, which you'll be glad to know burned down.
Oh, good. She's, well, not a spar was left. Anyway, that's my opinion on the presidency.
He look, he was in an era where... That was being
laissez-faire. That was
he
real.
Was being that exactly was being debated, and someone put it into practice.
Yeah. Well, and I would say what has made this country great? Okay, it's not our military.
No.
And it's certainly not our government. It's our government that lets people do. It's the individual.
I think what makes America great at the end of the day is two things: the ability to innovate and innovation that. Has ability to capitalize.
Yeah, but to have that, you have to have a government that allows you to, you know, well, doesn't regulate the hell out of you and tax the hell out of you.
That's true. That's true.
Well, that's what I'm talking about.
But you know, because, you know, you aren't going to come up with a great idea in the Soviet Union and then running out and get capital for it.
Hell no.
What's going to happen is someone's going to take your great idea and turn it into a war to the state.
I don't even think you can. There's no reason to have a great idea. That's why they had all this, you know.
Well, that's why scientists wanted out, because they realized that themselves.
Well, the scientists weren't the problem. We're talking about people that are in manufacturing and production.
But even then.
Where they're making all these things that nobody wants and not making the things that everybody wants.
But that's not.
Because you don't have
But I'm talking
price.
About innovation. The things that.
It's stifled, though.
That's right. It is stifled.
Right, because of the government. But that's because the government's staying out of it.
But in, like, for instance, go back, even if you dislike him, go back to Rockefeller, okay?
Which one?
J.D.,
okay.
Go back to the source. Sitting there in Cleveland, all right, and coming up with a use for a byproduct of kerosene.
Yeah, well.
Then having the means to go and get the capital to back what he wants
sure.
to do.
Well, that's just one example.
At the end of the day.
Yeah, but is J.D. Rockefeller, is he lionized or vilified?
He's both.
What do you mean both? Everybody thinks he's a robber baron like Vanderbilt and all those guys.
Well, you can.
They're the guys who made this country.
Look.
Henry Ford.
Those are the tactics. You can argue with the tactics if you like. But just in a vacuum, Armand, the simple statement, and it's very true. He had an idea because he had an innovative product. And he took that product and he made an innovative company. And he went out and capitalized his company, and he changed the nation and the world by doing so.
Right, but that's just one example. I'm talking about the whole thing.
I can go on and on.
The greatness of this country is not its government. It's its individuals.
Did I once mention the word government in that thing?
Well, that's what I'm saying. That's all I'm saying.
So we agree.
I don't know. A lot of things you say on the show don't agree with that. They're pretty socialist statements.
I think you have a very narrow view of a few things.
Well, you don't believe in the Laffer curve, first of all, which is pretty much, I mean, that's been proven over and over again. But anyway, I'm just saying. But I'm just saying, we're talking about Warren Harding. If you look at these people.
So a Warren Harding type.
Why is he such a horrible president? He's not.
Dude, did I ever come out and say he's a horrible president?
I don't know about you, but I mean, because you don't rank the presidents. But people who do are all liberals. And they think the more the guy did, whether it worked or not, the better.
Yes, people generally want to see a body of work. Sometimes, like in sports, sometimes the best GMs are the ones who don't make the most trades.
Of course.
Okay,
of course.
Exactly.
It's this notion that we have to do something.
You don't always. Sometimes your best action is inaction.
Right.
And Harding, you know, but.
Not only that, sometimes, you know.
Nothing's really, I mean, I
don't. These guys do something, and they do it autonomously, like, say, Gulf of Tonkin.
Yeah.
They don't even ask, they don't even go by the Constitution.
No.
They totally disregard it.
No, it's.
And these are great presidents, supposedly.
LBJ?
Well, why not? Medicare, that's a great.
Great in some aspects, horrible in others,
yeah,
man.
When it goes broke, we'll see how great it is.
Yeah.
Teddy Roosevelt.
As I've always said, Armand, judge presidents very dispassionately and very coldly.
Well, it's impossible to do.
No,
it's always going to be imbued with your personal, your prejudices. I mean, that's just the way it is.
The problem
is that's what we're teaching kids. Well,
judge dispassionately.
We're not teaching kids anything, so I'm not even
cold hand
about
of
that.
Reality. That's what's needed. Don't quit lionizing and mythologizing any president. It does no good. It really does no good.
Well, I'm just saying, this guy is vilified. He's always the worst.
And I don't think he is.
I think he's anywhere near the worst.
And he probably shouldn't be. You're right.
Yeah, if you go by, you know, scandals, which weren't his fault.
Yeah, he probably shouldn't be. If you want to point someone worse, someone who tried something and it leads further into the Great Depression, you can point at at the guy behind Coolidge, Hoover, right?
Well, Hoover and Roosevelt, yeah.
So?
But these guys, you know.
Your point.
All right, well, that's what I'm saying.
You got mine? Do you have mine?
I don't know what it was. I think you agreed with me, but
I'm not sure. I think you agree with me that what the greatness of America is.
That's what I asked you.
You can take that kernel of an idea and you can go and get capital to run with it.
Okay, but does the government abet that or does it oppose that?
Okay,
there's the question.
Sometimes it gives incentives for it. Other times the regulations put in place can tamp it down.
Of course it does.
Other times it can make it hard for truly ground floor startups to get off and running.
Well, that's what the whole point is. That's what crony capitalism is.
And it keeps crony capitalism
alive.
Damn
right. What do you think that's all about?
There you have it. 34, as we mentioned earlier, Paul von Hindenburg dies. 1976, Fritz Lang, the screenwriter, producer, director. I didn't know he lived until 76.
Yeah, he ripe old age.
Yeah, he's 86 years old. Good for Fritz, man.
You know, he's the one that had the countdown, 3,
yes,
2, 1.
Our famous countdown, because that's drama.
Yeah, I thought it was more dramatic.
And it is. He was right.
Yeah.
Showmanship. It's all about showmanship.
It's even more dramatic in German.
Well, let's see. How would that go?
I don't know. Eins, drei, feins. I don't know.
No, you started at one.
I know, but I don't know. Backwards.
79, the death, death of Thurman Munson.
What was he doing?
Airplane.
Yeah, but was it just no? It wasn't like Clemente was going.
No,
kind of,
no,
he was just screwing around, right?
Well, he's flying somewhere.
Flying.
He wasn't screwing.
Wasn't he a private
around.
Plane though?
It was a private
well,
small
that's what I'm
plane.
Saying. Yeah,
right.
He's not.
He was not
he's
on
not
a,
taking food to wherever.
But
you
it's
know?
Notable because two
earthquake victims, right? That was Clemente.
No, Clemente
wasn't?
Was heading to Nicaragua to
earthquake
victims,
yeah.
And he died on January 1st, 1972. That's Clemente.
What the hell is this guy? Wasn't it the middle of the season?
Yes.
What are they doing flying around?
Well, they had an off day or something. Oh,
like that guy. Who's the guy on a boat?
Well, there's been several. The Cleveland Indians.
Now, the Mets guys. Yeah. Remember they had that boating accident?
Yeah. Yeah. Cleveland Indians had a boating accident as well. Miami Marlins, Jose Fernandez, boating accident.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, a lot of ball players, man.
Man, what are you guys doing? Stay off these boats and planes. Do like me. Go get in your office and
shut the door and stay there.
Sleep under your desk.
And 1998, final death for me.
Yeah, she died young.
Sherry Lewis.
I never got into her. What was the name of her puppet?
Lamb Chop.
Lamb Chop, yeah.
So as a kid, I got to tell you, it freaked me out a little. I didn't understand the whole thing. I didn't.
No, I never got it, but that's okay.
I did. Maybe all it was right,
I got a couple
beyond
of,
me. Who else you got?
Well,
deaths?
Thomas Gainsborough, 1788.
Is he a painter?
Yes. The blue boy, probably one of the
Great English landscape artist?
No, he's not. No, that's Turner.
That's Turner.
Or Constable. This guy was more a portrait guy.
Okay.
And the blue boy is like his most famous. I like Girl with Pigs.
Is that is the blue boy the one wearing the button down?
Yeah, the blue outfit. You know,
and he's got
the blue
knickers.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, and he's got dark long hair.
Yeah, I'm not sure where it's at. It might be in the Tate. Yeah, I don't know. It's in London. I don't know. But anyway.
That sounds like it'd be in the National, not the Tate.
I don't know. Anyway, the big one here, I think, of the day is Enrico Caruso.
Oh!
Who's like the first real international celebrity.
Was he a baritone or a tenor?
Tenor, you know. And it's like, this guy. Well, I mean, this guy is basically before this guy, you know. And, of course, he used the gramophone in the recordings. He was the first to really do that. But he was...
How many How much did he record, Armand?
A lot.
Good.
There's all kinds of stuff. You go on YouTube, you can hear. And he's got a great voice. I mean, I love.
And how
voice.
Much did the recording technology of the time capture his
abilities?
Pretty well.
Yeah. Okay. You know, in these old movies.
I guess you're only as good as the speakers on playback. Anyway,
yeah, but they've remastered him, I guess, or whatever. Probably make him sound even better now.
Yeah.
But
would that be true?
I guess I don't know. I don't know.
I mean, I guess it's up to the people remastering it.
Yeah,
but.
I don't know. But anyway, he was quite a guy.
Enrico Caruso.
Yeah, the first. And
not to be confused with Enrico Palazzo.
Who's that?
From Naked Gun.
Oh, okay. I thought that was some Milanese football player.
He's the umpire at the end of Naked Gun. Of course, you don't like those movies, so.
No, they weren't bad. They were okay.
Come on, that had Elvis's wife.
But this guy, you know, he had promoting him? Edward Bernays.
Bernays?
Yeah.
He made quite a sauce.
No, not that.
Oh.
We were talking about him and being his PR guy and all that. He was the guy that actually came up with spin and public relations.
Oh.
He was Woodrow Wilson's boy.
Oh, well, he needed some spin, some public relations.
Yeah, yeah. Let's make the Germans look terrible, like they're bayoneting, you know, Belgian women and babies. And, you know, that's this guy. This guy's a propagandist. We talked about him, Edward Bernays.
Yep, yep.
But anyway, he helped out Caruso quite a bit. And this is before TV.
So, let me ask. Like, put him in context of a star. Like, would he pack arenas?
Yeah.
Or?
Well, I mean, that's not before that age, but he'd go to, you know, the New York Met.
Would he play a big room, like a big 3,000 seat theater?
Maybe. I don't know what he did.
Would he go on tour?
Yeah, he did that.
Okay.
But wherever he went, people knew him. You know,
he
was mobbed. You know,
because
he's an opera singer.
But. How did they disseminate? I mean, granted, there's recordings.
Yeah.
But there's no radio at this time.
Well, that's what Beverly Sills was amazed. That
right.
This guy had no radio, no TV, none of this stuff.
Right. There's
but this guy,
there's no
when
mass.
He came to town. You know.
So you literally, you have to have someone who's got a Victrola.
Yeah, or a gramophone.
They have to have the early record or.
Yeah.
Then they literally have to invite you to their parlor to listen to it.
Yeah,
otherwise,
he died 21.
There's
so the
no
radio
way.
Radio is
still 5 years away.
So anyway, it was around because they did Harding's. Harding's.
I know, but mass radio like WNBC, KMOX, all the big stations. That's more like 26.
Guy, anyway, he had a hemorrhage. He died of pleurisy.
Yeah,
and peritonitis.
Favorite song or recording?
Well, I guess Pagliacci's favorite, his famous one, Vesti la Giubba.
Vesti la
Giubba. Yeah, play it.
I'm not hooked up. I can't.
Anyway.
Sorry. Yeah. Well, post it on the Facebook page, Armand. Post it on the Facebook page.
I don't
know. We do that kind of stuff.
Post anything.
Oh, sure you do. All right, folks. August 2nd, that's a wrap. It's been a good show. Lots of good topics today. Lots of good events. Thank you for tuning in. And everybody, we continue... during this last month to keep growing on the show. So if you like what we do, share it, tell your friends, Subscribe on iTunes, Stitcher, or Podbean. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/thisdayinhistorypodcast, and follow us on Instagram. For producers Andrew Allen, Brian Crock, show writer Corey Smith, for Armand Kachigian, I'm Tony Hubert, and when August the 3rd rolls around, we will be here to tell you about it on lineupmedia.fm.
This podcast was a presentation of lineupmedia.fm.